It's wonderful to have everyone back in person. If we could all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. This evening, we do not have any presentations of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. And if we could do a roll call of members.
Amanda Champion?
Here.
Deborah Dawson?
Here.
Henry Granison?
Present.
Rich John has asked to be excused. Dan Klein?
Here.
Ann Corman?
Present.
Mike Lane?
Here.
Leslyn McBean-Claiborne has also asked to be excused. Dave McKenna?
Here.
Glenn Morey has asked to be excused this evening. Martha Robertson?
Here.
Leslie Schill?
Here.
Mike Sigler?
Here.
And Shauna Black?
Here.
We have 11 members present.
Thank you. We will have an executive session this evening to discuss contract negotiations as well as real estate negotiations. I do not expect any action to be taken whenever we get out of that session. Is there any reordering of business this evening? I see no hands. Let's move to privilege of the floor. And I have one blue comment card. If you are in the audience and would like to participate in privilege of the floor, we would ask for you to fill out one of our blue comment cards. We have Mr. Dick Costello. Mr. Costello, would you like to stand up at the microphone and talk to us a little bit?
Thank you very much. Can everybody hear me? Recently, Governor Cuomo signed a bill to allow 12-year-olds to use rifles to hunt deer. We are the only state in the country that does not allow, had not allowed rifles to be used for deer hunting for 12-year-olds. The governor signed that and passed it down to you folks. All counties have to adapt that. We have 19 counties that already have. All the surrounding counties of Tompkins County have voted for it. Now, it might sound like an alarming topic to you, 12-year-olds with guns. It is not. Rest assured, it is not. It carries a lot of parameters for safety. For example, the youngster has to be mentored by someone who's been hunting 23 years, 21 years and older, and has to be within arm's reach. They have to be within arm's reach of each other, dressed in blaze orange. They're not allowed to be in tree stands. They have to be on the ground. These people have all taken hunter ed courses, the youngsters have. And I might say passed very easily the hunter ed courses. The incidents that we have, I'm a hunter safety instructor. I've been doing it since 1973. So I'm very involved with this topic. And I can tell you that the incidents that we have had to deal with over the years involve ages 35 to 48. That's where the sloppiness comes in. That's where mishaps occur within that age group. Statistics prove that out. The younger people, they're pretty good. So we're trying to get these youngsters involved in a wholesome activity with their parents, and I think it's worth voting for because all the other states in the country have voted for it with no incidents. It gives a family a chance to bond. Some of you I know take a different point of view. That's fine. But I will probably be back again to speak to you again about this activity. So I would just like to have you not panic when you hear a 12-year-old with a shot with a rifle hunting deer. Don't panic. It's well under control. The governor thinks it is. He signed the bill and then passed it down to the legislatures and the counties to adapt it. So that's why I'm here. I've been here before. I've spoke to you folks before at other times. I would also say this. If any of you have concerns about this, I would be more than happy to share a cup of coffee with you somewhere and sit down one-on-one and talk it over. Hear your side one-on-one, I think, is a good idea. I'd be more than happy to do that. So that invitation is open to anyone who has any inkling of a negative thought, give me a call. I'm in the phone book. And let's get together and have a reasonable conversation. That's really all I have. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Costello. Also, just to let legislators know that we did discuss that topic in public safety most recently, and it appears that we will have another conversation July 15th, and there could possibly be a resolution associated with that meeting.
Nope.
Okay. I do not see anyone else here to speak on public privilege of the floor. I do want to remind the public that if you are interested in coming to one of our meetings, whether a committee meeting or a legislature meeting, that you are welcome to come in person and speak on privilege of the floor. We are also offering privilege of the floor to be offered via Zoom, too. And you would need to write public comment at tompkins-co.org in order to offer public comment. For municipal officials, I see Mr. George McGonigal from the City of Ithaca. Welcome, George.
How's my hair look?
Looking good, as always.
I don't really have anything prepared. I just wanted to come down and hang with you guys. And it feels good, doesn't it? I'm happy to take your questions, and if I don't know the answer right now, I'll try to find out. The only thing I can tell you is that the mayor's task force for police reimagining, which is focused on the city-only proposals, had their first meeting last week, and it's going to be an intense, like, month of a lot of meetings. So you'll find out more about that. I'll tell you more about that next month.
Thank you, George. I see Annie has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. George, I had some questions. I saw on Facebook about whether fireworks were allowed by people outside of, you know, like a organized situation. And I told them that New York State did start allowing this a few years ago. Now, the person I know where they live in downtown Ithaca. I don't know, and perhaps you do, is there some ordinance against setting off fireworks in the flats?
There's a noise ordinance, and I think it's hard to enforce around the 4th of July because there's so many people doing that. It's unfortunate that people do it over several days. It's bothersome to a lot of neighbors and to a lot of pets. So it'd be nice if people did their fireworks on the 4th of July and put them away. But it's hard to... I don't know if there's a specific ordinance against fireworks. I think fireworks are generally illegal in New York State. But people use them anyway.
A few years ago, the state changed their rule.
Okay.
Their law. So.
All right.
Okay. I was just wondering if you happen to know.
Henry.
Not an answer as usual.
George, when is the public safety committee supposed to report back to the mayor? When are they supposed to be done?
I'm on that task force.
Okay.
We're supposed to report to Common Council on the 1st of September. We won't be, that'll be a report. It won't be an end report. It's going to take several months for this work to play out.
And this is for the public safety aspect of the first idea in the Reimagining Public Safety report?
Correct.
Okay.
The task force, as it is now, is made up of about 17 people, I believe. That's bigger than the mayor first envisioned. There's going to be three members of council, three members of IPD, and the rest will be community members that the mayor selected.
Thank you. Next is Mike and then Leslie.
Hi, George.
Hi, Mike.
Wondered how things are going with the bridge over 6 Mile Creek down on Meadow Street, how, and the state's work on that. Is that going smoothly as far as traffic and things are concerned from your standpoint?
I think so. It's slower than normal. It's usually one lane instead of two. Last time I was down there, they were working on the northbound lanes. I think it's going well. They made a detour for through traffic that goes through the city on Floral Ave 13A, and I think that's helped quite a bit with the bottlenecks or lack thereof.
Thank you. It was good they were able to, the contractor was able to change to having only half the bridge closed instead of the whole thing, which they were talking about initially.
I agree. We're also working on the Geneva Street Bridge on Cascadilla Creek. City is.
Thank you.
Thank you. Leslie?
Thank you. George, can you tell us a little bit about where the city's going right now with ARP funds? We're spending a lot of time on the federal funds and how we're going to allocate them, wondering what the city's thinking and how that's evolving.
Good question. It's in the process of evolving. As you know, there's limited uses. We apparently can't use them for new cars for council members. I asked. Water. We have our dams are in really rough shape. They need to maybe millions of dollars worth of work. The wastewater treatment plant could use those monies. So I think infrastructure is one of the things that we're looking at the most. But Steve Thayer is kind of the point man talking about how we're going to use that money. And he's the city controller.
Okay. Dan and then Henry.
Hey, George. County's giving up to do a redistricting commission, independent redistricting commission. It'll be in place the fall, I guess, is what we're shooting for. And just want to, you know, keep in touch with the city, want to hear what the city's doing, too, with their redistricting, because the one way in which we overlap is to consider the county legislature districts that are in the city to potentially line up with the city ward districts. They don't have to. They don't right now. But I think it would be good, you know, to communicate over this time period as we're both looking at it. So I just want to kind of put that on your radar.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks.
That's a good idea.
Henry and then Deborah.
Yes. George, the legislature passed a marijuana legalization law this year, and I know that each city has to not disapprove it. I assume that, have you guys discussed it at all?
Not yet, interestingly.
Is it on the agenda?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Deborah?
Well, if nobody else has anything to ask George, I just want to say that it's lovely to see you in person, George.
Likewise. I really like hanging with you guys. Pardon?
Stay the whole night.
Well, maybe I won't.
He doesn't love us that much.
All right. I'll hang for a while.
Great. Thanks, Joyce, George,
thank
for joining us. Yeah. Take care. Next, we have privilege of the floor for legislators. Mike Lane.
Well, it was just Independence Day. And One of the smallest villages in our county is the village of Freeville. It's in my district, along with the village of Dryden. And Freeville outdid itself on the 4th of July and had a wonderful celebration and invited all of its residents, as well as folks from the surrounding area, to come in. And there was a community photo taken on Main Street in the village of Freeville. It was sort of in commemoration of the one that was taken in 1987 during the village's centennial celebration. It was taken by the same Ithaca Journal photographer who had taken it back in 1987. Many of the people there held up 87 signs when they were actually in the photo. It was fun. They took videos as well as photos. And afterwards, there was a farmer's market down the street at the in front of the elementary school, and they had a big cake that everyone got to sample. They are working on the Station Park, which is the Freeville terminus of the trail coming from Dryden, and eventually it'll be coming all the way from Ithaca. It is going to be a remarkable structure. It's not complete yet, but you're going to all want to plan to go look at that. I just am amazed by what they're doing over there, and to commemorate the idea of a railroad station, railroad tracks, seats, all kinds of things like that, and there's going to be a lot of displays. So I wanted to tell folks about that. The other thing I wanted to mention on Independence Day was I had one of those things that gave me a clutch in the throat. That sometimes happens on a patriotic celebration. I was watching the Capitol 4th program in the evening out of Washington, D.C. And at the very beginning, there was the national anthem sung by Renee Fleming, who is a pretty well-known opera singer. And they had her set up with a chorus and a military chorus. And behind her, you could see our Capitol building. And the flag was a beautiful setting. And when she sang the national anthem and she got to the words, "and our flag was still there," I couldn't help but think of January 6th. And our flag is still there. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Amanda?
Thanks. I just sent you all legislators an email about the library director search, which continues. We are to the point again where the person is coming next Tuesday, the 13th, for in-person interviews. Unfortunately, we have only one candidate at this point, but everyone's hoping that she will be a good fit. So she'll be giving a public presentation at 5:30 at the library. It is going to be on Zoom. People will be able to ask questions. It's for anyone and everyone in the community. So anyone who's listening, any elected officials, any staff, anyone is, you know, welcome to come check this person out, hear their presentation, ask questions, and then give feedback. The search process really is about finding someone that the library and the staff and the board likes, but also the community wants to see run the operation. So that is July 13th at 5:30. It's also been shared with many, news outlets and press release and all that. So please come if you're interested in checking that person out.
Great. Thank you, Amanda. Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just also, speaking of libraries, I just wanted to put a shout out to in Trumansburg, we have a library. It's called Ulysses Philomathic Library. and I think they had just had their 20th anniversary. We have our librarian who is resigning, Kasana Broadwell, and I want to put a shout out. Thank you for all the great work she's done for our library. And the library board is also doing a search. You can go on our website or the website for the library and see how to apply if you know anybody that's interested. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Leslie Schill.
Thank you, Shauna. I just wanted to remind folks that it is the 100th birthday of Stewart Park. We have had many storms lately, and therefore the 4th of July bash was postponed, but it will be scheduled for July 11th. So please make a plan to go over and celebrate one of our great downtown parks on July 11th for its 100th birthday. The mayor will be there. There'll be a lot of fun activities. Check it out on the Friends of Stewart Park's website. They've done an amazing job over there with the revitalization of this park.
Great. Thank you, Leslie. Any other comments from legislators? Boy, this is a quiet group tonight. Can't believe it. We've been cooped up for 16 months and you've got nothing more. Wow. Okay. I have a pretty short cheers report this evening. Before we start, though, I would like to send out our heartfelt sympathy to the McBean-Claiborne family for their loss of their loved one. We miss Chair McBean-Claiborne this evening, but we know that she's spending much-needed time with her family tonight. I would also like to welcome my colleagues back to our first official in-person legislature meeting. We made it, officially. 16 months away from the chambers, and it's really great to be back. Many of us didn't see all the work that went on behind the scenes, putting our meetings on Zoom and YouTube, but I really want to send our thanks to our legislature clerks, Brittany, Katrina, Michelle, and Kathy, administration team, Lisa, Amy, Dominic, and Deanna. I also like to extend our gratitude to Greg, Lauren, and Jim. This has been a massive puzzle at times to try and figure out how to live stream and make sure that all of our meetings are available to the public. What we have learned is that for many of our meetings, we can accommodate our staff better by sometimes allowing them to Zoom in. Internally, we have also had the conversation about keeping committee meetings and legislature meetings available on Zoom and or YouTube. More to come on that in our Government Operations Committee. The last part of the chair's report, I would like to send our heartfelt sympathies to the families who have lost loved ones at the Surfside condos in Florida. Currently, they have recovered 32 people with many more missing. When something like this happens, it makes me realize the magnitude and importance of government agencies that provide safeguards and protections for our citizens. As much as many people complain for having to get permits on decks or landlords that complain about having annual inspections, we have seen even in our small community that loss of life can result from unsafe conditions. On a happier note, I'd like to wish all of our parents and kids that are out of school to have a wonderful summer. School is out and more people are venturing outside and enjoying all that Tompkins County has to offer. I'd also like to welcome the tourists to our beautiful, beautiful county, and I hope that you enjoy your stay here and spend lots of money. A quick reminder, if you have a school-aged child and would like your 12-plus-year-old child to be fully vaccinated before school starts, you might want to think about scheduling their vaccine within the week. I know some parents held off on getting the vaccine, myself included, but the importance of my two older children going back to school in person, vaccinated, will help with peace of mind in the fall and hopefully help with the spread of COVID in our larger community. Thank you for listening. Yeah, Deborah.
I just wanted to add on to what you said. I saw a story today in one of the newspapers that in almost half of the states in the United States, COVID's on the rise. And in some states, it's doubling weekly. I mean, it's up 50%. So if you're out there wondering what you should do for your vacation, New York State is not only beautiful, but safe. So come on down.
That's right. Thank you, Deborah. Martha?
So what you said about students going back to school, so you're saying, like, if you need two two shots and then you're fully vaccinated 2 weeks after the second shot.
Exactly right.
Do the math. Summer's almost over. Oh, man. But no, you're right. It's you're absolutely right. And it's really important. And I will point out, if you look at the counties surrounding us, you don't have to go very far away, and we have a long way to go on vaccination. So it's really important. This pandemic isn't over. We really cannot be lulled into complacency on this. So I know our health department is and our hospital are not complacent. How the colleges are not complacent, but I hope people will continue to take it as seriously as ever. Great. Thanks.
Thanks, Martha. Mr. Lynch, I see that you came in a little bit late. Would you like to give us an update on Enfield as a municipal official?
No, I am a municipal official. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Okay.
I have nothing to report tonight. I'm just here to observe.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, we do have a special topic presentation. We would like to welcome Heather McDaniel, president of the Ithaca Area Economic Development. And she's going to give a presentation this evening on the Tompkins County Economic Recovery Strategy. Hello, Heather.
Good evening. It's so nice to see all of you in one place. I'm looking forward to when I get to join you again. Okay, so I'm here to talk about the Tompkins County Economic Recovery Strategy this evening. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Okay, can everyone see that? Everyone can hear me?
We're good. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Dominic, can her microphone, can her voice get any louder? I don't know if it's on her end.
Am I too loud?
No, you're a little bit faint. I don't know if you can bump up your microphone at your end.
Well, you know I can talk louder. Is that
all
better?
Right. That's all right. Well, we'll just have to listen. Thank you, Heather.
Okay. So Ithaca Area Economic Development, as the economic development organization for Tompkins County, led the process to develop the Tompkins County Economic Recovery Strategy. It's an action plan to position Tompkins County for success as the economy recovers from the COVID-19 pandemic. It is not IAED's plan. It is our countywide plan, and it is the work of many of the community, workforce, and economic development stakeholders in our community. In the interest of time tonight, I'm not going to go through the whole strategy, but I'm going to touch on all the different areas in the strategy and give you a little bit of a teaser. And of course, I'll provide links to the full strategy if anyone wants more information. The first section in the strategy really talks about economic impacts. A number of us stakeholders over the course of the pandemic tracked over time declines in transportation, declines in, you know, traffic downtown on the commons. You name it, we probably were tracking it during COVID, just really to get a sense of where we're at. You can see on the bottom of this slide here the unemployment rate for Ithaca compared to the southern tier in New York State. And as, you know, as usual over time, our employment rate went up, it went back down, it's lower than the region and the state, which is a good thing for us and for the rest of the community. But what's more telling here on the top of my slide is the labor force participation rate. You can see between 2019 and 2020 that number of people that were actually gainfully employed or looking for work in the labor market has declined. And that's a number that we're going to continue to watch over time. But again, the strategy has, you know, lots of data to show how far we fell and where we are in terms of coming back to what I would call normal. A number of us stakeholders spent a significant amount of time last year talking to other stakeholders, to sector leaders, to businesses, to policy advocates, really trying to understand the new challenges and the new opportunities as a result of the pandemic. And these discussions went on throughout the pandemic. The strategy itself is organized in sort of three phases of recovery. The first phase, response. The full strategy identifies a range of actions that were taken during this phase to mobilize partners and resources to provide immediate assistance to affected businesses. And really, that was in that first 3 to 6 months of the pandemic. As an example, 2 new loan programs were developed, and together we were able to mobilize almost $710,000 to support 122 businesses. Some of those businesses are still in business today because of our swift actions here in Tompkins County. The second phase, stabilization. As the economy really started to open back up last year, the strategy captures another list of significant actions that were taken by all of our stakeholders to stabilize at-risk businesses and save jobs. Another almost $50,000 supported 23 businesses. Over 200 businesses received customized support. In addition to our partners compiling a number of resource guides and providing consistent information, even as regulations were changing by the hour and by the minute. We also helped to launch several consumer confidence messaging campaigns to let people know that there were safe ways to pick up food, to still frequent some of your beloved downtown restaurants during COVID. I really can't say enough about all the partners and their work and their dedication to this community and responding to this crisis and helping to stabilize our businesses and save jobs. The strategy really does highlight so many of those actions that were taken. And all through this phase, these two phases, we were continuing to talk to our stakeholders and identify challenges, identify new opportunities that would really inform the third phase of this strategy. This year and over the next 2 to 3 years, we shift to focus on the future, actions that will support phase 3, redevelopment and revitalization. We want to ensure that our economy recovers, and not only recovers, but comes back stronger and better than it ever was before. The phase 3 in the strategy is modeled very much on the Tompkins County Economic Development Strategy. There's actions focused on targeted business sectors, workforce, as well as infrastructure. So this is really meant to be a companion piece to the countywide economic development strategy, but again, really focusing on the new actions and new opportunities as a result of the pandemic. I'm not going to go into great detail about all of the actions and all of the sections in this phase. This is really the meat of the strategy, and I would encourage you when you have a chance to take a look at those things in more detail if you want more information. But I am going to talk about them for a few minutes while I have a captive audience. What we did is we identified the sectors that we knew were hard hit, that there were new realities in, that needed additional focus above and beyond what we already do. For local businesses, we know that they are extremely vulnerable. They were the most impacted businesses because they're captive to the local market. The economy shut down. So for all practical purposes, for several months, even over a year for some businesses, they were not able to do business. So we recognize that recovery efforts need to focus on not only financial, but also technical assistance to this sector. And the full strategy really lays out a number of those actions. Tourism, need I say more, But really, the Strategic Tourism Planning Board and the Convention and Visitors Bureau are working on a more full and rounded strategy. But this strategy incorporates the short-term actions that they had already identified when we were developing this strategy that will generate immediate results. They'll increase room tax. They'll increase sales tax. Some of those are the building blocks of municipal government budgets. The office market. We're hearing the office market all over the country may not rebound until after 2025. There's shrinking need for office space, and we're seeing more vacancies, not only downtown, but in some of the other areas where there are offices in the county. We're focusing some actions with some partners on recruiting new office tenants, but also working with existing landlords to repurpose their spaces for other uses, small-scale manufacturing, more residential. The sky's really the limit as we start to think about how we might re-envision some of those office spaces. And manufacturing, there really is a new reality to manufacturing right now. We know that there needs to be more focus on supply chain development, on reshoring, on diversifying our existing manufacturing base right here in Tompkins County, and helping companies to adopt technology that will improve and streamline production processes to be more competitive. Manufacturing is one of those targeted sectors that's always identified in an economic development strategy. We debated whether it needed to be here and ultimately decided that it did because it is a really important sector of our economy. It's a larger percentage of our GDP than most of those local businesses and a larger payroll base as well. So, you know, continued focus here, but also new focus in other targeted areas. In terms of workforce, we know that this is central to recovery. Low-wage, entry-level workers were the most heavily impacted from the pandemic, and our actions here really focus on closing skills gaps for the in-demand jobs that are open today and those that we know will be open tomorrow. And also working with businesses in key sectors to fill some of those high-skilled positions that help to keep those businesses running and open. So there's going to be a little bit of talent attraction and a little bit of skills base to get talent into existing positions. But the workforce strategy really lays that out more fully that the Workforce Development Board has been working on and will be rolling out later this summer. And then infrastructure, that third sort of leg to the stool. The infrastructure is what supports and keeps all the rest of the economy going. And one of the things that we identified under that sort of infrastructure tab is the need to really support downtown Ithaca. A thriving downtown center is essential to retain and attract business, workforce, and investment all over our county. So there are some actions in there focused on really supporting downtown, in particular the conference center that closed on their funding last week. That'll be key to our redevelopment and revitalization in downtown over the next several years. In terms of transportation, when we talk to our transportation partners, they're really focused on micro-mobility, point-to-point, last-mile kinds of connections, and looking to support some actions around there. And then we identified some key sites that we think are prime for redevelopment. If done right, if we take the opportunity now to invest in renovating some really large existing spaces and making infrastructure improvements to pave the way for new development, that we will be repaid in new sales tax and new property tax base in spades into the future. So there's a few areas that are identified there. And then, of course, broadband. We all know how broadband has been exacerbated by the pandemic. So there's, you know, some actions that are focused directly on helping to close some of those gaps within our community and create more equity across Tompkins County. This is And I know I said it at the beginning, it's really a plan that all of the workforce, economic, and community development stakeholders have put together. There are a number of actions in each of the different areas that all of the stakeholders are either implementing now or looking at implementing in the near future or in the next couple of years. What we have also done is put together a list of the short and long-term initiatives and what we think they're going to cost, who the partners are that are working on them. And, you know, we're actively looking at ways to find support for these actions to move our economy forward. I just yesterday added in here, we put together all of the partners, a request at the City of Ithaca. They've got a process for their recovery funding that is led through departments. We worked with Tom Knipe from the Office of Economic Development and put together a cover letter and a request for nearly every action in our strategy for at least a percentage of funding to help support those. I did hear from the mayor today as he's putting his budget together and his budget process over the next couple of months through October when he presents his draft budget with recovery action items included. And he was confident that, you know, at least he said at least a nice majority of projects would be supported in terms of economic development. So, you know, this document will be a living document in terms of a strategy. It will be updated as new developments happen. This was our short-term list, and then I've also got a longer-term list of longer-term actions. We thought we'd be a little forward-thinking and ask the city to consider funding portions of many of these projects as well. And with that, I would like to say thank you very much for your time this evening. And there's the link to the full strategy and many of our partners.
Could I ask if you could back up to the long-term strategy slide for just a moment? You went through that pretty quickly, and I didn't get the numbers.
Oh, absolutely.
From the sound of it, too, it sounds like George McGonigal, who's in our crowd here, is pretty excited about the 1.725 funding of all of your programs there, just to give you a little feedback.
That's great. Okay, let's see if I can get back in here. How's that? Can you see that?
Yeah, that's the agenda.
No, we cannot. No. Sharing your desktop.
I'm sharing my desktop. Okay, hang on.
There it is.
I love technology when I can figure it out. Sorry. There we go. How's
Thank
that?
You. Can you make it full screen?
I am seeing full screen.
We see your notes, you know, the... Now go back. Yeah. Well.
Oh, right. Hang on. Yep. There we go.
Thank you.
Okay. Mike Sigler first.
I was wondering what the Route 13 couplet is.
Well, that is a project down on Meadow Street and Fulton, bounded by Buffalo and Court Street. As you are well aware, there's a little bit of a traffic bottleneck on Route 13. And with the rezoning and projected redevelopment of Carpenter Park, the Inlet Island, West End, that whole area, the State Department of Transportation is really asking the City of Ithaca to look at ways to alleviate some of the traffic there. I, for one, am all for that. So one of the DOT's recommendations has been to make Buffalo Street one way and potentially Court Street the other direction for that block between Meadow and Fulton. So that's something that they're looking into and want to do a little more feasibility around either the couplet or doing something else to alleviate some of the traffic and transportation problems down there.
Tim Klein.
Thank you. Can you say anything briefly about the broadband last mile line there?
So we know that the county is working on the Fujitsu study, really identifying where the gaps in service are as the first step. And then one of the things that we've also done at IAED is we got a grant to do one last mile connection that's 17 miles of broadband in the town of Lansing. So what we've done is put a placeholder in here to support whether it be municipal broadband or some other entity that decides to go in and look at other last mile as a result of that Fujitsu study. So this would support some future project, again, longer term initiatives.
Thank you. Leslie, and then Ann, and then Mike.
Hi, Heather.
Hi.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Key Development Site Infrastructure Fund? It's so intriguing.
Well, it's very much like something we may have talked about in the past for affordable housing. Having the ability to have a fund that would help to develop some of the infrastructure so that a developer could come in and build, whether it be for sale housing unit development or more office or industrial space. But we hear it all the time that, you know, they want to build, but there's no water, there's no sewer infrastructure. It's hard to get that kind of upfront funding from the state in most areas of our county because we don't have the high poverty rates and the high unemployment rates that other areas do. So having that fund that might be able to pay for some of that pre-development to entice developers to build on a larger scale is what we were envisioning.
And in the plan, we'll see what some of those key development sites are kind of being thought of.
Absolutely. The Chainwork site, the former Emerson Power Transmission site, 750,000 square feet of vacant space on 98 acres within two blocks of downtown. The West End, the waterfront, and then there's two existing buildings on sites in the town of Dryden, both near the corner of Route 13 and 366.
Thank you. Ann, Mike, and then Henry.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation, Heather. A couple of things. I'm glad to see a little bit more detail about prioritizing small businesses, although it's not, I understand this is not all the detail in it, but I just want to put a plug in there because, as you know, a lot of times it's the small businesses that turn into the medium-sized businesses and employ a lot of people around here, and also they're often the ones that employ people who are single parents, people who are Black, Indigenous, and other people of color. So I really want to make sure, also women-owned businesses, so I really want to make sure that's something that I mean, I don't see it in here, and I didn't see it in the other things that you sent me. So I just want to make sure that that's a focus so that we, because a lot of what I've been reading is talking about, well, let's not go back to pre-pandemic, but let's look forward, especially with all what we've been talking about this year of let's make sure those people that were not included before or that were underrepresented or underemployed are put in the forefront so that we can actually build back better for, I don't mean to be political about it, but, you know, build back a better system. So I just want to put a shout out for that. And I'm glad to see for the pre-development sites, at least one in a rural area or slightly rural, Dryden, outside of the city. So thank you very much. One last thing I just want to say, because still a lot of the stuff that I'm seeing has to do with the city of Ithaca, so it would be really great to, as things roll out more and more plans are made to include, for instance, Drummondsburg Chamber of Commerce and other rural areas. Thank you.
Yeah, we have definitely prioritized not only looking at the city, but in programs that can help the entire county. We have challenged our partners in the city at the DIA, at the city's Office of Economic Development, to work more with Alternatives Federal Credit Union, with the Chamber, with IAED, to find ways that we might be able to pilot a small program, but then reach out into the entire community. So to the extent that we're able to get funding to do that technical assistance in the entrepreneurship programs, our pipeline will absolutely be the Trumansburg Chamber and, you know, the town of Dryden's small micro mini grant program. You know, there will definitely be reach out outside of the city.
Thank you very much. And one last question was, could you go back to the charts that you had early in the presentation?
The employment chart?
Oh, right. And so
this says
labor force participation. It says Ithaca. Is this just Ithaca and not Tompkins County?
This is Department of Labor data, which is the Ithaca Metropolitan Statistical Area. I believe it's most of the county, but don't quote me. It's not just the city of Ithaca, but it is a formal census designation that we're able to get this level of detail at.
So we're not able to get the county specific. This is the designated area that we would
That's
get.
That's correct. In. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Mike, Henry, and then Martha.
Just briefly, Heather, thank you for your presentation. Following up on a couple of comments that Ann just made, it's pretty important that the rural sections of the county know that this group that the county helps to sponsor is trying to help them. When your organization changed its name, it sent a terrible message to the area outside of the town of Ithaca. And I think you folks need to do everything you can to explain how these various projects that you've talked about, which are exciting, are going to help benefit people in the rural areas. And not just because we're building up the downtown area and therefore that's our county seat and everything, all the economic activity ought to go there. But the other villages, the other rural areas are entitled to grow as well. Thank you.
Yep, point well taken. We did not take changing our name very lightly. New name, same mission, support for the entire county.
Thank you. Henry and then Martha.
Yes, Heather, can you go back to the long-term items and tell me about the micro-mobility bike share program?
Sure. Micro-mobility is a new term for me. This is like a bike share, but it will probably be more of a scooter kind of mobility program. You may have noticed that the Lime bikes have moved out, and there is definitely some interest in the community to start a program, probably more local and more like car share, that would provide these micro mobility devices. And, you know, we would capture that income locally rather than paying someone like Lime Bike. I am told that the group that's working on this, the Center for Community Transportation, has already submitted a grant to the state of New York through their CFA process.
Thank you.
Thank you. Martha?
Thanks, Sean. Thank you, Heather. Glad to hear that you presented this to the mayor or to the whole, to the planning committee or both? What was the?
The strategy I did present to the Common Council's planning committee.
with this list?
With this list, yes. And then worked with Tom Knipe and other partners to put together, once the city outlined their proposal process, we worked together to put together individual proposals. That was after the planning committee met.
Okay. So it sounds like all the decisions are going into sort of the budget process in the fall. Even though it's ARPA money is available now, they're not moving any decisions up in terms of timing. So funding wouldn't be available until January at the earliest. Is that right?
That's my understanding.
Okay. So we were really sensitive to the idea that the tourism sector especially needed way quicker attention and support than that, and already gone through two committees, and on our agenda tonight is funding for tourism promotion, $573,000. I know you know about that. So, you know, we kind of heard that message and said, okay, we're coming out of fund balance. We're not looking at ARPA at this point, but we hear the really dire and time sensitive need. Not hearing any similar urgency at the city level. And now looking at this list, short-term initiatives, so that looks like 50-50. You've got $1.3 million, you've asked the city for half of that. The longer-term initiatives, if you want to go to the next page, I kind of cringe here because you've asked the city for about 32%. Of all of these needs, although I gotta say, it feels like the majority of the money would be spent to benefit city businesses and in the city. Maybe not the majority, but certainly at least half. And then the other piece of this that kind of sticks in my craw is that when I look at the ARPA money per capita, the city is getting about $526 per resident of the city. The county's getting about $180 per resident. So I'm kind of feeling like, oh, maybe those numbers should be flipped on this one especially. I'm, you know, not weighing in on any particular initiative there. I really know that we have to make some really tough choices. I'm just going to toss that out. I don't know if you want to respond at all, but it's kind of hitting me that way.
Yeah. All of the stakeholders certainly met, and we looked at where the programs were and where the beneficiaries might be. Traffic and transportation, even investing in infrastructure in the city of Ithaca definitely benefits both the people that drive into the city of Ithaca to work every day, not only from Groton, but also from outside of the county. So there are some spinoff benefits there when we looked at, you know, the small business programs and realistically where we thought that businesses would be located and where employees might be located. You know, I'm not going to argue one way or the other. We're out looking for sources of funding. We would appreciate support for economic development, both at the Ithaca area and throughout the county. We're not going to, you know, get down to the pennies on exactly who it's benefiting and how it's benefiting. But, you know, the message here is that any actions that support economic recovery are good for our community and for our county. And we have professional staff that are working on these initiatives and, you know, would appreciate consideration for support wherever that support may come from.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. I'm going to pipe in here and then we'll go to Deborah and Leslie. I also echo Martha, Ann, and Mike's concerns about most of these initiatives being geared towards the city of Ithaca. I represent the town of Ithaca, and I really don't think many of these would have any effect on my constituents. Also, I would caution us or your organization for being part of a bike share, including scooters. They actually have them in Providence right now, and I can tell you those scooters are absolutely everywhere. They're in driveways. They're thrown in the waterways, and people are driving them like absolute lunatics, whenever they're impaired. You know, and I can honestly say, you know, from a county standpoint, if we were to provide any funding, I could see this being a great, great, great source of liability if there was an accident. So I personally would not support the county being part of any of this type of initiative.
So I will just say it again. This is a product of all of the stakeholders. When we spoke to the transportation stakeholders, and there were several, this was one of the projects and one of the actions that rose to the top and had some support for. That doesn't mean that it's a project of Ithaca Area Economic Development.
Okay. Thank you. Deborah and then Leslie.
I will say this is what I raised my hand about. I will say that I don't interpret your presentation, Heather, as saying, okay, we need $5.3 million, and we're going to get $1.75 million from the city, and you guys are going to make up the rest.
No.
I don't see an ask here. You're just presenting a strategy. What I would like to ask you about, though, further to Annie's point about workforce development, I recently read a little blurb about a report that the Cornell ILR school did. Let's see, it's called The New Possible Innovative Workforce Development and Skills Maps for Tompkins County. I was wondering if that was included or acknowledged or in some way part of the strategy that IAED considered.
Yes, we actually worked with the Workforce Development Board as they commissioned that study, and many of the actions in this strategy are the result of some of that early work, in-demand occupations, and the list that was developed through the ILR school is definitely incorporated in our strategy here. We're all working together.
Because we want to achieve a new and better normal and not just go back to the old one.
That's correct. There's no possibility we could go back to the old one. I think we all recognize that there needs to be a new and better.
Thank you.
Thank you. Leslie and Martha?
Yes, thank you. So I just want to weigh in on responding to some of folks' concerns around how the presentation you just gave, which I thought was really well thought through, how the benefits for investment in our city benefit our entire county. So I am a city rep, right? District 2 is in the city. But I just want to say, in an agglomeration in the economy where we bring together new industry, we bring together infrastructure improvements, we bring together new housing opportunities, you know, these things start to cluster, they build upon themselves, they create a better place, it attracts more business, more visits, more people who want to live in a community that has kind of housing and your economic local needs met, as well as jobs. And so looking at some of these projects, and I know this is not an exhaustive list, this is some of the projects we're thinking about, some that we'll be thinking about too. We also have to think about mitigating impacts. So everybody drives through the city to get to wherever they want to be, grocery shopping, their job, where they're taking their kids. So we're going to have to make some infrastructural improvements in order to facilitate people getting to, through, around, and to make sure that we're investing properly in all of those. So thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Martha?
Yeah, I hesitate to say what I said before because I don't want it misinterpreted. I believe in smart growth. I believe in nodal developments that we've been recognized around the state for accomplishing, and it's, you know, a 20-year project going back to Ed Marsh's first, you know, days here. And it really means by strengthening our nodes, including the city, then it's the most efficient way to use all of the infrastructure, you know, from energy to transportation to water and sewer. So I'm not begrudging. I'm not saying the city isn't key to the health, the economic health of the county. It really is. I guess it's the per capita dollar figure that, that you don't have anything to do with, about, but, let me mention about micromobility. We've long asked for, we've long urged that there be a circulator, a TCAT circulator in the city. I mean, I'd be all for that. That's kind of a last mile thing that it would be in the city, but it would, I think, really would benefit people from being able to, say, park at Wegmans and hop on a circulator and in 5 minutes know that they'd be downtown. Congestion is reduced, all the rest of it. So all for transportation initiatives, but I'm not sure that's the one that really would float my boat. So anyway, I think these are important choices. It's really important to get the professional judgment, as you said, of the all the stakeholders, and I really appreciate the list. Look forward to hearing more. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Heather, for joining us. And I'm assuming that if anyone has any other questions, they can pop you an email or give you a phone call.
Absolutely. You all know where to find me.
Great. Thank you so much for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, next in our agenda, we have reports by the County Administrator, Lisa Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of brief updates, and then we have our monthly COVID update to get to. So just from where I sit, I wanted to make you all aware that progress continues to be made on the reimagining public safety front as we're working with the city and Center for Policing Equity on the process timeline for implementing the recommendations of the report, as well as operationalizing the Community Justice Center. We plan to get the CJC project director and data analysts positions posted next week in conjunction with the city. Also, I sent you updates, but to remind you and notify the public that after a thorough search process, we have selected a new budget director in county administration, and his name is Daniel Nolan. He's going to be coming to us from...
Can you say that name again, please?
Daniel Nolan.
Nolan?
Nolan, mm-hmm. He's currently the manager of capital finance at the New York Public Library. He's originally from the upstate New York area. He will be relocating here and beginning in county administration on July 26th. Unfortunately, our current budget preparer, Kevin, will be his final day is July 24th. So that does not offer overlap. But you'll see, and on the agenda, included in the agenda is a resolution which includes contracting for consulting. So we do hope that, they can, Mr. Nolan will be able to consult on an ongoing basis as needed to get us through this, this budget cycle. Those are my two brief updates, and I have Amy and Frank joining us virtually from our virtual EOC to give a COVID update.
Hi, Amy. How are you doing? Hi, Frank.
Is that sharing at this point?
That is sharing.
And that's the full screen.
Perfect.
Good.
All right. So this is our now monthly COVID update. And so I will go through slides that are familiar to many of you. As far as COVID-19 data, we have seen a smaller amount of caseload at this point. We're at 3 active cases. We have changed how we are reporting this, and that was updated earlier this week, I believe, letting people know that we've shifted to reporting the daily table. We're going to be doing that weekly. However, we'll still update by day. It'll just only be uploaded once a week. So that information is shifting, as well as some of the other information. A lot of changes since we last spoke. Executive orders have ended, which means a lot of those powers that were previously in place have changed, hence you guys all being back in person tonight. Additionally, our local emergency declaration has expired. So that expired on July 3rd, and we chose not to renew that at that time. We have made some statements about the Delta variant on June 28th. We talked about the presence of two cases here in Tompkins County and what that meant. We've also talked about some of our shifting in how our county operations are happening. So some of our departments have come back up online, and we're still working on that. So it is going to be a process. It's not going to be immediate that everything looks like it did in 2019, but we're learning from what we've gone through and are starting to move through some of that. And then here are some of the financials, the same chart that we've shared time and time again with all of you, the amount of hours put into COVID response, as well as some of our leads that continue to exist, and then our COVID-related expenses. You'll see the drivers there continue to be that testing, as well as contract staffing and nursing. And again, since we've shifted to monthly, those numbers change a little bit differently now, but that's where we're at. I'm going to turn it over to Frank for the next slide.
Frank, we can hear you.
And Frank, you're a chipmunk again.
We hear you. Now we can't see you.
I was going to say, this happens for Frank from time to time where he becomes a chipmunk but comes back.
We can't hear you.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
All right.
So as Amy stated, our disease numbers continue to be very, very low. So that's very good news. Next slide, Amy. Positives against testing. Number is still very, very low. You will see that those numbers go up from their lowest points because there's significantly less testing occurring now over the summer. And so, you know, when you have a case against lower numbers, you'll see that go up a little bit, but the number is still very, very low. Next slide. This is really our vaccination progress. I don't know that this chart's really going to change much over time. You can see our local testing. It kind of caught up with itself, first dose to second dose. We're doing small numbers, 10, 15 folks at a time now. So you're really not going to see these have dramatic changes. Probably not for the duration. One thing we wanted to bring folks' attention is a program that we launched a couple of months ago. It's our Public Health Ambassador Program. We used some funding from the Kresge Foundation, and this was something Samantha Hilson and I had been talking about wanting to do pre-COVID, was bring on some staff that have lived experience and connections to our community, particularly parts of our community that we're not serving or we know we're not serving sufficiently. And we really were able to kind of jumpstart that with COVID through the vaccination process. So we brought on four individuals in May, and they really helped support our pop-up pods out in the community. So they would go out and knock door to door. They would put signs up. They talked to community leaders. They spent time in mobile home parks, one of our most high-risk communities out there around the county, and really talked to people about vaccine availability. And so we really saw some good success. We had quite a few folks that, you know, came through our vaccination clinics that said, you know, having somebody come talk to them directly really made an impact. So those folks have been working to really support those clinics. They've actually worked in the clinics to be there so the people that they talked to saw a friendly face when they arrived. And we've really been working with them to kind of build this program into something that we hope is a bit more sustainable. So as we've seen our vaccination efforts kind of slow down a little bit, we've really been shifting their focus onto health equity and our community health improvement plan priorities to really try to establish for the department a team of people that can help us reach our community better than we have in the past. And so these folks have done amazing work. The funding will only carry them a little bit further, but you will see in our 2022 budget proposal a request to move this program forward within our health promotions program. And really the purpose here, it's different than many of the other community health workers that are out there. Tammy Baker is a form of community health worker. I think the lead staff that REACH will be bringing on board will be community health workers. They're very specific in reaching particular populations. What we're looking for with our community health worker program or public health ambassadors is to really reach into our community, our communities of color, our immigrant, our migrant worker communities, our mobile home parks where many of our low socioeconomic status individuals live, to find out what their needs are, to better understand what those needs are, and then to get information from them on how we can build programming to support those needs. So we're excited that we were able to jumpstart this, and we've really seen some good success, and we're hopeful we'll be able to move it forward. But more to come on that. Wanted to share with you some of the health department website statistics. I saw these today when Dominic shared them, and it's kind of mind-boggling. And it really goes to the public information team that we stood up early during the pandemic and all the work that they did to get information out quickly and accurately and in a way that people could access this. So you'll see, you know, prior to June of 2019, between March and June, we had 17,000 page views. And then when you get into COVID, we ended up with 2.7 million, right? So that's a bit of a jump, and it just shows the reach that obviously the pandemic drove people to the website, but they wouldn't continually be going there if it wasn't for the high quality information that they were finding there. There's been a lot of page views for our homepage, as well as all of the other pages that are offshoots of the main page. We've seen the vaccine registry draw people. The pop-up clinic pages are still drawing people to the website. So we just wanted to thank that PIO group. Ted Sheely in particular really stepped up and helped develop the website into the tool that it is today and really, really helped us reach a lot of people in our community.
And then the final slide, we haven't shared recently some of the costs with testing. This looks similar to what you've seen before. Since we've last shared it, we have continued to see testing occur. The numbers have dropped off some. However, there is still a percentage of the population that is coming through and using the testing site and the testing that you provided with your commitment from the legislature. We continue to claim this through FEMA. We've seen some reimbursement, not a lot of reimbursement, but we're hopeful that we'll continue to see that. Our most recent FEMA reimbursements are at that 100% level, and we've been told that the ones that we've received, the 75%, will be able to reclaim that additional funding. So we are hopeful that we'll receive full reimbursement on all of these costs. The FEMA timeline has slowed down a little bit more as more municipalities have started to claim and their workload has increased. But we know that it's there and are thankful that we're able to provide this to our community. I think that is all I have, unless there are questions.
Thank you, Amy and Frank.
Boy, first off, it's too bad we didn't know that our website was going to be an internet sensation. We could have sold some advertising and lowered the next. Yeah, thanks, Andy. Let's see here. Are there any questions for Frank or Amy? Mike Lane?
Hi, folks. Wondered about the testing facility at the old dental building on Tioga Street. Is that still operating? And are we still restricted from parking in the back part towards Sears Street?
They are no longer operating on Tioga Street. I can't answer the parking question. Sorry.
Well, then, if they're not there, I guess we can't. Thank you.
Yes.
Henry?
Yeah, since the June 28th disclosure of the Delta variant, have there been any other Delta variants that have been found?
Yeah, so we don't know. I only get an update on the variants about once a month from Cornell and the research work that they're doing there. The only reason we have the information about variants that we do is because of the research work going on at Cornell. And it takes a while to get those results from positive tests. And then we're meeting once a month to get an update on where things stand. So those two Delta variants were part of the last update. I think we're due in another week or so to meet again.
Another question. Amy, do you know when most agencies will be open for the county?
I'm sorry, Henry, you cut out as you asked the question.
Do you know when most agencies will be open for the county?
Oh, the different departments?
Right.
It depends on the department, what's happened. I know the DMV spoke, I think, with GEO last week about opening fully. They're going to continue with appointments through much of the summer and then open back up to the public. A majority of the departments have opened to the public. It may look different. I know within our building, we're continuing to keep the door locked. However, people get buzzed in, which is not so much COVID-related, but as safety-related, as we don't have a reception area within this building. For the majority of the departments, though, they are open to the public at this point and have been doing so, but it does vary department to department, and we're communicating that through their website and other channels.
Thank you.
Martha? Thanks for more good news. I think a million of those page views were Henry, right? Refreshing. Sorry, Henry. Are you concerned at all about stalling out on the vaccination, you know, rate? And do we, did you, I wasn't sure of the details, you have 66,000 or so people with at least one shot. Is that what, something like that with the number, or 68? At any rate, are you concerned that we really aren't going to get higher than that? Or do you think maybe, say, when children younger than 12 would be able to get vaccinated, do you think we'll bring some of their families, some of their parents along, that sort of thing? I mean, and how concerned are you?
Yeah, well, I'm the public health director, so the things that concern me is a very, very long list. And I think, you know, obviously we'd love to see vaccination rates at 85% or higher. But that's just not going to happen. I think we can accept that now. You're right. The number will go up when vaccines are become available for that younger age group. I think vaccine rates will go up a little bit more, too, as we see some organizations and businesses start to put more requirements and or incentives around their employees I guess their employees and staff to be vaccinated. So I think that will continue. But Martha, I think you hit on it earlier in the meeting. You can drive a half an hour and vaccination rates are below 40%. And so, you know, the disease doesn't really know county borders. I think, you know, at this point we're happy with where we've gotten as a county because we've certainly outpaced the rest of the state and much of the nation. So that's something to be happy and proud about. But really, unless we're all, we're all kind of all in this together, unless those around us, you know, start to see those numbers go up pretty dramatically, I have more concern about that than necessarily, you know, the vaccination rates here and what we might be able to do.
Okay, thanks very much.
Can you tell me, is the Public Health Ambassador Program, is that going to be funded through 2022?
We're going to be bringing that forward as part of our budget to have a conversation with you all during budget process.
That sounds great. I think it's a wonderful program, and I would love to see it into the next year as well. Leslie?
So, Frank, I just want to say kudos to your team. I know that moving from 17,000 views to 2.7 is not something that's an easy transition. And I'm wondering what's the next big hit when you have this high visibility like you do. We have any number of issues that need to be attended to, including continuing on with COVID vaccination. But it could be other vaccinations kids weren't getting last year as they get ready for school. Or it could be the governor's new disaster emergency announcement for gun violence. Just wondering how we can continue to keep public health on the top of everybody's list, take advantage of your high visibility.
Yeah, well, the first thing that we're doing is hiring a communications coordinator, a public health communications coordinator. We've advertised that. We'll be interviewing in the next week or two in hopes to bring somebody on to help supplement Dom, as he now has to go back and do all the other work you guys need him for, and really help us, you know, keep that profile up. Yes, and our hope and goal is to use our new higher profile to be able to talk about those other issues, particularly mental health and substance use as well. You know, with the merger, we really want to leverage this profile, higher profile, to get the word out about available services and issues surrounding those individuals struggling with mental health or substance use disorders. So, yeah, a lot of issues that need attention, and we're putting some resources behind it to make sure we don't lose the momentum that's been built.
Thanks for all the work.
Oh, I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much, Amy and Frank. Have a great night.
Thank you.
I think also all of us probably consider Dominic to be like four different people, because he's floating all around the county, and he wears so many hats. So thank you, Dominic. You've really helped us during this pandemic, and we owe you a lot. So thank you. Also, I would like to extend our thanks to Kevin McGuire for his many years of service to us. He has made the budget process as least painful as possible, and he's really made it very simple for us to be able to vote for our budgets each year. So, Kevin, if you're watching, and I hope you're with your family, probably not watching, but thank you very much for your service. Okay, Jonathan Wood, I don't know if he's on this evening.
I am.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good. I don't have a report, but I did want to request an executive session on real estate matter. And I'm not sure whether that happened at the beginning of the meeting, because you were mute for the first couple of minutes.
Okay.
I didn't make any important votes during that period of time. but I did want to request an executive session on real estate matter, and I don't know whether that occurred during the...
Yeah, we did mention it, but... It's nice to do it again. So thank you. We're definitely covered this evening. Let's see here. Thanks, John. Director of Finance, Rick Snyder. Hi, Rick.
Hello. Good evening, everybody. I have a short, very short room tax report for you. I sent it out Friday afternoon, and by email, you should have gotten a copy of it. So I'm going to try to share my screen with you. There was a revised version that went out today, too, because there was a slight error in it, a math error. Thank you, Rich John, for pointing that out. I should be sharing the screen now. Do you see it?
Yes, you do.
I'll try to make it a little bit bigger. There we go. In our second quarter here... We had room tax sales that came in at $593,600. So that's up quite a bit from the first quarter where we only had $167,000. The two columns here on the right break it down into categories for hotels and for our bed and breakfasts. But if you add the first and the second quarter together, we come up with a grand total of $901,000 in room tax thus so far this year. One of the things, as we drill down in the notes that Nick Hemholt has supplied, since he works on most of these tables for us, the percentage of tax-exempt sales fell from 50.1% in the first quarter to just 16.4% in the second quarter, which is back to normal again. So all those high exempt, tax-exempt rooms are now back to a normal level, and that helps explain why we're at a pretty good level of $593,000 in the second quarter. This percent looks really big, but you have to remember we were at almost nothing last year, but the second quarter room tax is up 424% from last year. And again, that sounds really huge, but that's because we were down incredibly to very small actual numbers. I did look up the percentage of increase over 2019, which is a little bit more realistic to compare to, and that percentage is down about 24% from the level in 2019. You have to go back to about 2015 to find this level of room tax receipts. All in all, coming in at now at $901,000 year to date, we're at about 47% of budget. And we're halfway through the year, so we're just a little bit behind on budget. If you look at this table here, it shows how many people are registered or how many facilities are registered. And we have 82 that are lodging establishments. Those are like the bed and breakfasts. We have 28 registered hotels for a total of 107. Out of those 107, there are 21 delinquents. Out of those 21 delinquents, 14 of them are bed and breakfasts. 7 of them are hotels or motels. I again want to thank Nick Hemholt and Planning Department and Sustainability, along with our Treasury Manager, Lisa Schott, for putting these figures together for tonight. I won't read all the other notes at the bottom of the report. You have those emailed to you, but it simply breaks down an explanation of the delinquent ones. How many are did bed and breakfasts? Those 14, the follow-up that we've done, for example, 3 of them sent the returns in after July 30th. 10 have been sent delinquent letters, et cetera. So these are just the notes that we keep on each one of them that are late. And that's the status of room tax halfway through 2021. Are there any questions?
Deborah, and then Henry.
Yeah, thanks for this very exhaustive report on hotel tax, Rick. I appreciate it. I know that these delinquent hotels have been a subject of consternation for us for quite some time. And when we got these particular hotels who were just chronically long-term delinquent in their payments, I noticed that you say that you asked the county attorney's office to send a letter. I'm wondering what kind of letter we're going to be sending at this point, because clearly it's not going to be news to them that they're delinquent. What action can we be taking at this point?
Normally the letters do reap quite a good benefit. Most of them get a little bit scared and they come forward with their payment. There's always one or two that are the problematic ones that have been delinquent for a while. Like you can review the notes and you can see which ones are promising to pay by the end of July, which ones are constantly late. But we do add those penalties and we do have that as an enforcement mechanism. I think the letters, for the most part, seem to yield some good fruit. I might turn it over to Jonathan if he wants to add any other more severe type of enforcement to this. Jonathan?
Yeah, sure. I realized before I was in the dark. You know, I mean, the plain truth is, Deborah, I mean, we've had this for 20-something years, and it's always been an issue. It's really not different. It got a little worse during COVID because, obviously, hotels were not making money. But we've always had this issue, and we've always had a progression of sending them letters, contacting them, threatening. We've once or twice took further action. But we always get our money. I mean, that's the truth. It just sometimes takes longer than others. And COVID just exacerbated the situation. But, you know, I mean, the plain truth is Rick has started reporting on this more, mostly because of COVID and the situation got worse. But we've always had this situation. It's always been the case.
Thank you. Next is Henry and then Ann.
Yes, I just want to point out that the Airbnb numbers for the second quarter of 2020-2021 were about 3,000. The Airbnb numbers for 2019, which I looked up, were $115,000. And so that's quite a drop off, and we did not see an increase in the second quarter for Airbnb, which
I think there's an anomaly in this reporting. I have to check with Lisa and Nick, and I'll share it with you now, but I have no confidence in what I'm saying here is absolutely correct. It's just an idea that I have. I just get the summary table. I think what's happened is that this was the first quarter for the bed and breakfast where they went to 3% to 5%. Remember, I changed that rule and we changed that law. And I think what's mischaracterized is that when they changed them from 3% to 5%, they moved them into the hotel category as same as hotel. That they're paying 5%. And I think the top, the categories here at the top, might have to be changed to 3% as titles and 5% instead of hotels and bed and breakfasts. And I think they got those categories moved. And I want to move them back. I think it's more helpful to show them like we have here with hotels and bed and breakfasts, even though bed and breakfasts are now paying the full 5%. Because I know that there was a considerable amount of money that came in more because of that increase from 3 to 5%. I just don't think they've had a chance to convert their report. I know that Nick was saying that there were some adjustments that have to be made because they don't know how they're going to report going forward, whether they're going to report as those paying 3% versus those paying 5%. Obviously, everybody's paying 5% now, so we have to look into that. So you might get a revision of this report because I don't think that the bed and breakfasts have dropped off like it looks here. I think they've just been moved over into the hotel category, and we really don't want to do that. But that's going to take some support work from our staff with both Nick and Lisa working together on that.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up.
Thanks, Henry. Ann and then Martha.
Thank you. Two questions. One is that if it's possible, Rick, when you're giving us any financials, I know we've mentioned this before for some other things. If it's possible, I think Richard's brought this up a couple times, so we could compare this to 2019 numbers rather than just 2020. I know you mentioned that, but it's just nice to have the
the chart here.
Here we go. This is from Nick, and this shows back to 2011. If you can see this, I can make it a little bit bigger.
Okay, that's good to see, but what I'm asking is if it can be included in what you give us.
Well, yeah, I went to giving you no room tax reports for the first 6 years I was here to like way over the top. I'm sorry, I said sales tax, room tax reports to way over the top over the last year and a half. Again, I think Nick reports out on this at the Peak Committee because he prepares these figures. I'm not sure how much of it he shares, but here we have from 2011 right to date. And if you go back to 2015, you can see we're at about a level in 2016, 2015, that is about the same level here. So this data is available. It's just, I never know how much to share with you and how often to share. Cause like I said, it's not been one of our major drivers in the past, but I can certainly give you 2019 figures to compare with, because that's more of a normal year. I think that's what you're asking for, right?
Right. Like, well, I know we've mentioned it before for sales tax and for, you know, so for these figures, I think, I don't know how other legislators feel, but for me, having the 2019 figures helps us give us a better picture getting okay. back towards something I don't want to say normal. But okay, thank you. And then one other question, I guess, is I don't know if it's for you or for Jonathan, but so have those letters been sent recently that go to the delinquent organizations that are delinquent in their room tax?
Jonathan, are you available to answer that?
Yeah, I can't tell you the last date that letters went out. I mean, typically we work with finance when they tell us, you know, it's really a time to contact these folks. Then we do that. You know, we always do it upon request, but it's coordinated. And I can't tell you the exact date of the last one. I can look.
I think there was an email, John, that mentioned that Rick had sent you a request on April 30th, and he hadn't heard back. So if the two of you could coordinate communication to get some new letters out, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, it was sometime in April that I think Lisa Schott had, and she works directly with the county attorney's office to request letters that gone out. I don't think we've sent letters since then.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure at that time we sent letters, if that was the date. But I didn't remember the date.
But we're due to send the next batch.
Okay.
Yep, we're due to send the next batch.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Martha?
Back to that issue of the B&Bs going into the hotel column. But yeah, it really would help to put them back in the columns where they were, so we can actually kind of, it's a real good barometer of the health of the hotel industry. And right now it looks like, wow, hotels are doing great. When in fact, maybe a good chunk of that is are the B&Bs. So,
right.
I it's good that you sort of identified that as an issue, and I'm sure it'd be great to get back to the same kind of apples to apples comparison. Thanks very much.
I have one question as numbers. Are these numbers that we have actually received funding, or are these numbers that have been billed?
This is actually returns that have been returned and cash that's been received.
Okay. And then can you tell me also, is there a number that we have that's outstanding?
Well, we don't bill for it. So it's not like a receivable on the book. The way that the law is that they have returns that they have to file with us, just like they do for sales tax with the state.
or any other kind of tax, and that the return is required back into our office at such and such a date with payment. And so, of course, we make the returns available, and we usually have pretty good compliance. But it's not a situation where we can bill anybody. It's totally on what they report to us.
Okay. I think, yeah. Is there any way that we know what is owed, or it would just be self-reporting?
Only what they report to us. They report their gross sales and their net sales and their exempt sales, and then they send us a check with their report. So it's enforceable by law that they can't.
Right.
And we do have, if we ever have a problem, we have been known to go out and audit them. We have done a couple of audits on certain ones, and that's within our right to do so. That's part of the law, but it's basically whatever they report on a return, just like your income tax return or any other tax return.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Any other questions? Okay. I see no other hands.
Thank you.
Any reports from county staff? And are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Okay, I see none. Let's move on to the consent agenda. Resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of the standing or special committees. And we do have two advisory board appointments. The Developmental Disabilities Subcommittee, Kaki Wunderlich, Mental Health Services Board Member Representative. Her term expires December 31st, 2024. Youth Services Advisory Board, Patricia Bouchel, At-Large Representative. Her term expires December 31st, 2023. And starting as part of the consent agenda, Public Safety Committee, Resolution A, authorization to accept an award of a grant for the benefit of the drug treatment courts of Tompkins County Probation and Community Justice Department, ID 10088. Human Services Coalition, Resolution B, appropriation to provide funding to the Public Health Department from FEMA grant revenues and authorization for the interim county administrator to execute contract with Cuga Health Systems for the contractual expenses of community surveillance testing for Tompkins County residents related to COVID-19, ID 10173, Resolution C, Budget Adjustment Social Services, ID 10171, Resolution D, Budget Adjustment County Office for the Aging 2021 through 2022, Unmet Needs Funding, ID 10191, Facilities and Infrastructure, Resolution E, Airport Engineering Consultant Contract Extension, Ithaca Tompkins International Airport, ID 10182, Resolution F, Audit of Final Payment, Baseline King Corporation, Runway 1432, Supplemental Wind Cones, Ithaca Tompkins International Airport, 10183. Resolution G, authorizing acceptance of a Federal Aviation Administration FAA grant, Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations, CRRSA, Act for Operating Costs, Debt Service, Loss of Revenue and Concessions, Ithaca Tompkins International Airport, ID 10184. Budget, Capital and Personnel Committee, Resolution H, authorization for public hearing, Tompkins Cortland Community College operating budget 2021 through 2022, ID 10174. If I could have someone move that. Moved by Amanda, seconded by Leslie Scheel. And let's vote on that. Okay. It's interesting not being on Zoom. Okay, all those in favor for the consent agenda and the advisory board appointments? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10,
And that's 11.
We have a unanimous vote. Thank you.
It was so fast.
It was so fast. We're out of practice.
Yeah, everybody's tentatively raising their hand.
All right. Okay, moving along to, let's see here, it's 7:20. My guess is that we could probably get through these and perhaps take a break for executive session, if that works for everyone. Okay, let's do that. Standing committees. If we can move first to the Housing and Economic Development Committee, Chair Martha Robertson.
Thanks very much, Shauna. We last met on June 24th, and our next meeting is July 22nd at 9:30. Our June 24th meeting was really full. We had reports from Sue Del Hall about the child care climate, you know, the market here, the child care desert that we have. We got a report from Nick Helmholtz about the broadband study and also about tourism and also a report from the STPB on their recovery strategy. We heard a version of Heather McDaniel's economic recovery strategy, and also I heard a report from Natalie Brunoski about the workforce development strategy. So, and I have those slides from Natalie. I'll send those out tomorrow morning. Together with, Deborah, you mentioned that report that was done by folks at the Cornell ILR School, and I saw the news article about it and did a little skimming of the report, so I can send that out too, because I think it was...
I'd like to see it, Martha. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a really important point saying, okay, we don't want to just kind of get back to where we were. We have to really do some different things to make sure the inequities that were revealed in this pandemic, that we actually try to do things differently and correct some of those inequities. So that's a quick run through of what we did at the committee level, and happy to answer any questions.
Deborah?
Yeah, just quickly. I know that when several of us went to TC3 to talk about their new workforce curriculum pilot program, and Natalie presented a brief overview of this new workforce development plan. Has anybody seen that? Because we've asked her for it a couple times.
I think the board is still kind of working through it. I asked her like about the slides that she presented at HED, and sounds like they are absorbing the results of that Cornell study and along with what she's already done, and they'll have something more for us in the next month or two.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
Any other questions for Martha? Okay, thank
All
you,
right.
Martha.
You have thank
a-
you.
Resolution as well?
Yes, thank you. Resolution I, document 10189, appropriation from contingent fund, transfer funds for tourism promotion. I so move.
Okay. Henry Granison seconds. Any questions for Martha? Or Martha, would you like to explain this?
Just briefly, this was kind of in response to things that we did here at the April and May HED meetings. From especially the tourism sector, and happy to have the budget committee also work through this as well. And thanks, Deborah, for the support. So,
great, thank you. Any questions for Martha? Dan?
The resolution's been moved, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to comment. I support the resolution, but I just do want to point out that if I remember correctly, the contingent fund is about $2 million. That we put in the budget this year. Does that sound right? I believe that's the number. And if so, this is represents a significant percentage that we're taking out. It's just worth noting before we just all vote yes. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. Any other questions or comments? Okay, we have a short roll call.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
And are there any no's? Okay, that passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is the Downtown's Facility Committee. Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you. Downtown Facilities has not met since the last ledge meeting, And we will not be meeting this Thursday for everybody's information. It's on the committee if they haven't seen the announcement yet. What would have happened there will probably happen in the executive session this evening. So that's it.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions for Dave? Okay. Thanks, Dave. Next is the Public Safety Committee. Rich John is not here, nor is Glenn Morey. And we have Dave McKenna and Henry that are part of that committee. Would either of you like to report? It was a long time ago, I know.
I was just looking at the notes, and we did a report on the youth rifle request. We had a presentation, and there was a vote, and it passed. And, you know, they made some good arguments about why it should be passed, but, you know, there were still some of us who held the line. That's all I can recall from the meeting. I'm not sure whether you can recall anything else.
That's about right.
Great. And that was a 3-2 vote,
yes,
I believe. So I think it will probably come forward whenever Rich John returns, is my guess. The next public safety meeting is July 15th. Thank you, Henry. Thanks, Dave. Health and Human Services Committee. Henry, I hate to ask this, but do you mind reporting for HHS? I was not at that meeting.
Sure. Kip Kephart delivered an extensive report on Raise the Age. She also talked about that there have been gaps. There haven't been that many people who have been eligible, but there have been gaps in housing them. And so she did. The conclusion was that there's an 11-county group that we had meeting before the pandemic, and that the state put it on pause during the pandemic, but that now the state has contacted that group again, and they have two meetings since then. And she was saying she's hopeful but cautious about it. The state also contacted some sheriffs about housing youth in their prisons, but we did not. They contacted us, but we didn't have the personnel to do it. And Kid also thought it was illegal to do it just because of the law that was passed saying that you can't house youth in prisons. And then we had a discussion about the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. And 211 is handling the calls for this and other housing relief programs. They've had 220 contacts, 18 applications done, 41 pending, and they're helping 20 other applications with other resources. DSS reported 260 rental help applications and 77 utility help applications as of, what was that, July 21st. And so there is a priority system which passed on July 1st, where if you fit the criteria, you were considered first. Now it's first come, first serve. And so we're still trying to get the word out to people that, again, if you've had losses due to arrears for rent or for utilities, to please fill out the form. And they've also contacted landlords. And they thought that the landlords were also picking up in terms of doing it. Finally, Frank Krupa talked about the mobile crisis team. And he said that they expected when they saw the program one to two calls a week. And the staff, and they combined staff to do 24 hours a day, but they've had to incentivize the salary like DSS, 24-hour system, because they have July covered, but they're running out of people who can service it. They were supposed to partner with law enforcement in terms of acute crises, but they've been getting calls for independent crises. In fact, in December of 2019, they've had 5 calls. Since then, since May 20th, they've had above 30 calls every month. In fact, I think November they had 70 calls. And the people are just worn out. He is going to recruit a social worker to hopefully take over some of the need, but it is an ongoing crisis, especially because we're reimagining public safety. We have a plan to increase their load. So that will be a hard conversation that we'll have to have when reimagining public safety at the same time with the mobile crisis unit.
Thank you, Henry.
Deb, have a question?
Aren't you a ray of sunshine tonight? Deborah?
Yeah, thanks, Henry. It just seems like the number of applications for these ERAP and utility assistance programs are really low compared to, I guess, what we all feared would happen. Do you have any idea? Is it because people aren't informed? Is it because the requirements are too stringent? What's the deal?
I mean, 201 has done outreach in the community for it. It's also, they said that if they do it online with someone, it's taking between 45 minutes and an hour to complete. So the timing is not great. They've also, their numbers are different than DSS's because DSS's numbers include people who are just doing it on their own. The guy pointed out that right now the portal, if you put your information in the portal and you don't finish it, it doesn't save it.
Oh, I love it.
But they're fixing the portal allegedly to basically be able to save the information. And really they're also working with landlords because the money will be going to the landlords. And you know, we also had there's other plans out there. There's many other relief funds. And so, you know, I think that it's also being split that way, that many people are going after other relief or have moved away.
Thanks, Deb. And Henry, I have Leslie and Martha.
I just want to add to that Kip did share that as long as the eviction moratorium was still in place, it was definitely holding numbers low and that we're expecting that to balloon. So she was certainly encouraging people, please, please register early because this money will go away. And particularly for folks that were under 50%. Of AMI, early money, and first priority right now, but that's expiring.
Yeah, that has expired.
That expired. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. Martha?
And, of course, she couldn't tell us how long it would take for the state to approve those applications. So it's just another one of these head-scratchers it seems to take so long for anything to get through New York State. And it's just, it's really.
But yeah. Then compare it to FEMA.
Yeah, I'd heard that it was
getting
taking
FEMA money
ever so slowly.
I heard it was taking 4 to 6 weeks. Kit cannot comment on that. And in fact, it seemed to be longer. I know that Onondaga County, which got their money directly, has already had payments go through. But we're going with the state system and everything else, and so we're having delays in payment.
On the bright side, I was at the last Homeless and Housing Task Force meeting, and I can't remember, was it Kit or somebody was talking about this program, and there were like 70 or 80 housing professionals, the people who actually, like the case managers and the people who work directly with the folks who are at risk, and they're very in tune with what's going on. So I think that there's kind of the hand-to-hand outreach is strong, especially led by the Human Services Coalition. So fingers crossed that this works.
Yeah, no, I agree, Martha. I think this pandemic, if anything, it's brought all of our nonprofits together. And, you know, before, I can honestly say there was so much siloing, and there were organizations that were duplicating services. And right now, I feel like all of them have really, really come together and work so well together. I mean, it's really been amazing. It really has. Annie?
Thank you. I just wanted to put a shout out for anybody that's listening to go and watch the YouTube video from the Health and Human Services Committee meeting. What was the date on that? Well, I guess it's the
June
last
21st.
June 21st, the last one in there. There's a lot of good information for a lot of different updates on different aspects of the community, and especially, you know, raise the age, that presentation that Kit Gephardt gave.
to walk you through and explain everything for legislators, for people in the community, people looking to be a legislator. I mean, just really walks you through everything that has been going on and what we need to do in, or some ideas to go into the future. So thank you. That's about, I think she starts on that about 30 minutes into the meeting.
Great. Thank you, Annie. Any other questions for Henry? Okay. Thanks, Henry, for picking up, doing my job for me. Okay. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
We met way back on June 17th. Seems like a long time, doesn't it? From the Highway Department, we talked with Jeff Smith. We've got some resolutions tonight that went through, and we are doing one in a minute on a budget adjustment. But he did tell us that the Pine Tree Road project was about to be released to the bidders. I haven't heard more on that since that. On the airport, we also had several resolutions that you've seen, including extending for six months our agreement with CNS engineers. We normally have an RFP for that every 5 years, but with COVID and everything behind, we haven't been able to get the RFP out fast enough, and we will be proceeding with that during the next 6 months of this after this extension. One of the things that Mike Hall talked to us about was the new money for airports in the state budget. You remember the last round we were hoping to get up to $40 million. We got $14 million for our airport project, which we appreciated, of course, but we were not able to fund some of the things that we had wanted to do. So we have a new application going forward, and it's really important that this thing be shepherded at the state and also federal levels so that we can get some additional money that will do things like our green program up at the airport, the solar panels that we want to have added, as well as some of the other projects up there, including possibly the CDL testing site that we've been wanting to have for a long time. Keep your eye on that, because it's an important effort that we're going to be having. Arel Lamaro talked to us out of facilities about the lightning strike at the main courthouse that knocked out the transformer over there, 1950s vintage, and what a wonderful response he and his department had to that emergency, to get the electricity back online by bringing in generators and other things. And I know, Lisa, you were involved with it, including telling me that it could be a $350,000 project to repair this and change the transformer. Hopefully, there's going to be some insurance. And Lisa, you step right in and say, and maybe it's not going to cost us all that full amount of money, but it is a major, major project. It can tell you what a little surge in electricity can do. Coming down tonight and noticing the traffic lights that weren't working after the storm reminds us of that. But his department really, they were working 17-hour days that weekend to try to get things back to good. I think they had to send to Albany for parts and things like that. On the Bridge New York reimbursement to the towns program, we continued our discussion, including reviewing a proposal from Jeff Smith. We will be talking more about that as we go along, but we're making progress. And I think that's all, except I do have a resolution. If there are any questions, glad to answer them.
Any questions for Mike? I don't see any, Mike.
Dave, did I miss anything?
No, I don't believe so. Mike, I think you covered most of it.
So I would very much like to move Resolution J, budget adjustment. And I'm going to explain. I'm going to move the resolution that's in the packet tonight, but Dan Klein has an amendment for clarification, and Kathy wanted me to do it this way. So I'm going to move the original resolution and then go to Dan, hopefully, for the amendment. This is budget adjustment to increase consolidated highway improvement program CHIPS revenue highway department. It's ID 10188, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Ian Corman.
Dan?
Thanks. Yeah, so I guess I'm moving as an amendment. Is that? Yep. Thank you.
Kathy thought would be the best way to do it.
Sounds good. And be accepted as friendly, too.
Yeah, well, I'd like to move an amendment to change the wording of the second whereas so that it would say by including in rollover funding for restoration of 75% of the previous year's 20% reduction. So this is in your red folders.
Is that friendly to the mover and seconder?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's just wording. It's not
it's clarification of what.
And the amended resolution is in your red folder. It is the yellow copy. Are there any questions for Chair Michael Lane? Okay. This is a short roll call.
No, it doesn't require a short roll call. It can be voice vote.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at the wrong place. All those in favor of voting for Resolution 10188, that is unanimous. I'm a yes as well.
Dan, thank you for the new wording.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Now for the Tompkins Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Shauna. The Tiger has not met since the last legislature meeting, which means I'm working on the agenda for the next one, which is next Tuesday, the 7th, the 13th at 10:30. We're going to go back to our regular time. I hope I have Anna Kellis, Assemblywoman Kellis, coming to give us an update, you know, sort of wrap up of the last year, her first year on the legislature. With Lisa's sort of thumbs up, we're going to be looking at a resolution to urge New York State to actually pay that Medicaid reconciliation money that we finally scraped the information out of them about how much they owe us. So now we'll say, great, thank you so very much, and here's where to send the check. So those are two items for next week.
So how much do they owe us?
The $3.5 million?
Yeah.
And that's not counting 2020.
Correct. So that's what, 2018, 2019?
So for three years, starting 16, state fiscal year 16, 17, 17, 18, 18, 19, I believe.
Wow. Yeah, there were four numbers on that little table. Jason sent it to us. And, you know, it's one of those, it was this tiny little table that took so much work to get out of them. I'll have it in a second. Anyway, so that was the first step. 16-17, 17-18, 18-19, and 19-20. So 4 years, four state fiscal years. 636,000 the first year, 611,000. 1.1 million and 1.1 million, and that doesn't include this last year. So, and I will probably check in with Dave Lucas also about language for that. So,
great. Thank you, Martha. Any other questions for the Tiger Committee? Okay. Thank you. On to Government Operations Committee. Amanda Champion is chair.
Thanks, Shauna. Government Operations met on July 1st, which was last Thursday, in Chambers. So our first time back in a long time, so that was interesting. I did send a very, very long email to you all about the many things that we talked about. I'll just go over a couple of them, try to be quick. We did get an update from the DMV from Maureen Reynolds, our county clerk. We had some discussion, and she let us know what's going on there. And we also had a long conversation with Jay Franklin in assessment about what's going on with our county assessment. I would highly recommend that you either watch the video or read my email to get details more on that. I'm not going to go through all that. But some things that do pertain to legislators and we should take note of, we talked about our legislator travel and training budget. We each have an allotment each year. I also sent a chart to you that Kathy and our clerks put together about how much people have spent this year. And when we revised our rules 2 years ago, I think, we put it in there that if you intend to use the rest of your allotment this year, you need to let the clerks know by August 1st. If you feel like, oh, I'm not going to go to any trainings in the second half of the year, you can then offer your allotment to the rest of the legislators so somebody else could use it. So think about if you're going to be going to any conferences or anything in the second half of the year and let the clerks know what you're thinking about that. We also talked a little bit more about our local redistricting process. I emailed you all the memo that we had talked about, and the GEO committee has agreed to serve as our interview panel for the commissioners. As you all know, we're going to put together an independent redistricting commission, and I'm going to be reaching out to Dominic and try to get some publicity and get that going for reaching out to our community and asking for folks to be on that commission. So the GEO committee is going to be the legislators who will interview those people and decide who we'd like to be on that commission. We also talked a little bit about the open meetings law and how that relates to advisory boards. We all have to be back in public, but so do many advisory boards. Yet many advisory boards don't necessarily want to be back in person. So we had a lot of conversation about that. Lisa gave us some guidance. Jonathan gave us some guidance. We didn't really come up with an answer other than to say, let's try to figure this out in the next month or so we can give our advisory boards some clear direction and try to figure out which boards legally must meet in person and which ones can still do a hybrid or a Zoom model. And then also about advisory boards, Rich and Dan and I are going to be having a subcommittee to work with Kathy and the clerks to talk about our advisory boards in the big picture and trying to make some changes to improve consistency across boards, to try to solve some of the problems, because it's a huge amount of time that our clerks spend, keeping track of applicants, keeping track of who's on each board. It's a lot. So we're gonna start meeting and see if we can try to start making a few changes. And I'm happy to talk to anybody more about that. And I will stop there. We did a lot.
Any questions for Amanda? I don't see any. Amanda, would you like to move your resolution?
Yes, I have a resolution. This is Resolution K, appropriation from contingent fund and authorizing county administrator to enter into consulting agreements for administrative and budgetary purposes. We did pass this at GO, ID 10170.
If I could have a seconder, seconded by Leslie Scheel. And that is a short roll call. Amita Champion?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Are there any no's? I do not see any. That passes. Thank you, Amanda. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Chair Annie Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met on June 28th at 1:30, and we had several presentations. Most notable, we had an update regarding HAB's harmful algal bloom strategy. We talked about the comments on that the our planning department wrote up regarding the draft total maximum daily load for phosphorus in Cayuga Lake. I'll just say that the comments really spoke to making the information more understandable and more usable. Which we were all surprised that the report was lacking and that type of thing. And also what we'd be looking for down the road would be help in financing what we can do, because right now there's not really much money. There's a small amount that goes to soil and water, our soil and water department. But other than that, there's not really anything out there, especially for farmers. Did I miss anything on that part, Deborah?
I don't think so.
Okay. And so then we had, from the case board, we had the chair, Sarah Culotta. She's gave us a report on the green job, or gave us an update on the green jobs report and did a whole presentation on that. We then discussed accepting that report, and then we decided to delay accepting the report because it wasn't on, I didn't put it on the agenda. So we talked about that and what that would entail. And so there was comments by at least one legislator, and we'll forward those on to them, and then they might come back next month to give us a more detailed report with maybe some updates to their report. And then that would come before the legislature if we decide to accept it, to see if the legislature wants to accept that. And that doesn't mean that we agree with everything that would be in the report, but that we're taking the report. So if people wanted, since that might be coming up, I don't know if we would have them come to the full legislature to make the full presentation again. I guess we could talk about that down the road. But so they'll be coming again. So you could look at the video. Again, it's nice that all our committee meetings are on YouTube. So you could go back and look at the presentation that was on June 28th at the PEAK committee. And then I think that was the bulk of it. We discussed a little bit about the comments that I'm asking if individual legislators want to sign on to the DEC comments. And I'll reach out to the legislators who didn't respond, and almost forgot. So we also had a presentation from Luis Aguirre-Torres from the Sustainability Department at the City of Ithaca. And the UN has an energy program that he has started. I think it's called the Finger Lakes Energy Compact. And if we, the city has signed on to that, the Cornell has signed on to that, and so down the road we might want to think about signing on to that, and that opens us up to possible funding resources that were not available now. And preliminary, it doesn't look like we would have to sign on to say that we're going to do anything as far as our sustainability and environmental goals than what we're already doing, that the county has already committed to. So I think, and then we're going to meet again on Monday, July 26th at 1:30. That is, I just will say, it's my birthday. I don't know if the county's open that day, but if they are, we'll
be. It's not a national holiday yet.
It's not?
No.
County holiday?
We'll work on
holiday?
It.
Okay.
Under consideration for federal.
That's my report.
Thanks, Annie. Any questions? Henry Granison?
Yes, Annie, on the last point, do we have to become, is the requirement to become carbon neutral by 2030?
Currently, we're at 2040.
What?
Currently, we're at net zero by 2040.
It's yes, but I'm wondering whether the if we sign on, do we have to become, oh, so it's still 2040 for
no,
that?
No, it's 2050, I think, in the UN thing is 2050.
Okay.
But, right, so if we're going with the 2040, hopefully, I'm hoping we go to 2030. But if we are to still stick with the 2040, then we don't need to change anything to be able to sign on to that compact. We'd really like it to be, I will say when I've heard, but in conversations with, you know, different committees and things, that it sounded like more people were trying to be more inclusive, like it's, so it's not just Tompkins County, that it's more counties around here. That's why it was called the Finger Lakes Compact.
Any other questions for Annie? Thanks, Ann. Okay, next, Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Well, there's not much going on in BCP. we have not, the committee has not met since our last legislature meeting. We will be meeting next Monday. I think probably one of the most interesting pieces of our planned agenda is that we will be getting a presentation from TC3 on their operating budget for the next academic year. I want to remind everybody that the expanded budget committee meeting will be, the next expanded budget committee meeting will be on Monday, July 19th at 5:30. I would appreciate getting all of your double vision statements by close of business Wednesday, tomorrow, so that I can collate them and get them to Kathy and Michelle so that they can be distributed as part of the agenda packet for that expanded budget committee meeting. And I wanted to remind you all that the first thing you're supposed to say in the double vision statement is what percentage of the ARP funds you would be willing to see committed to county government operations as revenue replacement. I think that's everything. If people have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them.
I don't see any hands.
Nothing going on.
Good. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Chair Henry Granison.
Yes, thank you, Chair. We had a meeting on June 23rd, which we thanked everyone for a very successful Juneteenth week celebration. As you know, Juneteenth became a national holiday this year. We're working on it becoming a county holiday, too, but that will take time. HR also did a presentation regarding workplace demographics, and in her spare time, Ruby will be getting us the stats from that meeting. We also had a values discussion with Amy Hendricks, but we decided to submit the values, the examples of the values via email, as opposed to doing it during the meeting, and so we'll get out the values and we'll ask for examples of those four values that people have stated. We also discussed the programming done by the Office of Human Rights regarding Pride Month. And finally, we also raised the issue of celebrating the centennial birthday of Alex Haley in Ithaca, New York. And so we put together a small committee on that, try to do something because, you know, it's a celebration.
That's great. Any questions for Henry? Deborah?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if maybe we ought to think about celebrating Annie's birthday before we celebrate Alex Haley.
Well, it's not 100. Annie, are you 100?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, I think centennial comes before.
Okay. Thank you, Henry. And that is all for our reporting. We have some minutes of June 15th, 2021. Can I have a mover? Moved by Deborah, seconded by Amanda. Any questions or comments? Okay. All those in favor to approve minutes? That is unanimous. Thank you all. And if we could have a motion before break to go into executive session for purposes of discussing labor negotiations and real estate negotiations, no action will be taken. Moved by Henry, seconded by Dave McKenna. All those in favor? That's unanimous. Thank you. Let's see here. Let's take a 10-minute, 9-minute break, and we'll be back at 8:10.